This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with John Kennedy, the state treasurer. He'll be talking about the budget, and there is a new wrinkle that involves the state hospital system that could affect the budget imminently. And we'll talk with John Kennedy about this, as well as his continuing proposal for Louisiana to ditch some of its consulting contracts. Also on the show, Renee Arang, the Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Visit Baton Rouge. Visit Baton Rouge launched its locals campaign yesterday, and we'll talk with Renee about tourism in our community. 2.3 million people visited the Baton Rouge area last year. And we'll also have the maestro, Tim Muffett, with one of the world's great violinists coming to Baton Rouge this week, Suzanne Howe. All this, but now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, please call 877-217-5757. Inkstershow@WRKF.org if you'd like to reach us online. In studio is the captivating Vice President, Executive Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Visit Baton Rouge, Renee Arang. She's been touting the area for a dozen years in her capacity, and we're talking about travel and tourism in the greater Baton Rouge area. Good morning to you, Renee.
Good morning, Jim.
Nice to join you on George Clooney's 56th birthday, 53rd birthday. I gave him a few more years.
He's a whippersnapper.
Born on May 6th, 5'6", but he is 5'3 today. By the way, someone said the other day that I missed David Vitter's birthday. It was over the weekend. He turned 53 as well. Born 3 days before George Clooney. They have a lot in common, don't they?
Both captivating. That's
both,
right.
Both. What would a Taurus be called? A Taurian or something? But yeah, they're both signs of the zodiac. Taurus the bull. And there's a bull coming to the governor's race next year in David Bruce Vitter. So happy birthday to him and to George Clooney. Two handsome, dashing figures on the world scene. And speaking of the world scene, Baton Rouge will have the attention of the world in a few weeks when the Miss USA pageant comes this way. That's a big coup, isn't it?
It's very exciting. We were one of 12 cities bidding for the opportunity and are very pleased to have all of the contestants arriving on May 26th, and they'll be about in Baton Rouge celebrating our tourism and our beautiful city for 10 or 12 days before they go onto the stage at the River Center on June 8th.
They're coming May 26th.
They arrive. Mm-hmm.
So it takes a while to get ready.
It does. There's a lot of preliminary activity that goes on, but it's also an opportunity for us to showcase the contestants in the Baton Rouge region at plantation homes and attractions and restaurants and getting some great footage to air on that telecast.
This event's been in Las Vegas for several years, and Donald Trump, who owns the pageant, has brought it to Baton Rouge. What compelled Trump to come this way?
Well, I think several opportunities. It was a great partnership between the Louisiana Office of Tourism, Visit Baton Rouge, the City of Baton Rouge, the Seafood Promotion Board, and L'Auberge Casino all came together to put together a package that we think was uncomparable to anyone else's. And we were known as a great hospitality city because we hosted the Miss Teen pageant in 2005. So our relationships have continued with the Miss Universe organization since then.
Will the Donald be walking down Lafayette Street, or will he be out at the LaBerge in the future of St. George? Where will he be, or will he be with us?
I don't know that. There have been plans made for his stay here, but whether he actually comes or not hasn't been told to me. So,
well, I would hope he would show up for his own pageant.
We would hope so.
And hopefully it'd be nice to get him right here in the studio.
We'll see what we can do, Jim.
Well, and Michelle Southern, our producer, wants to inspect his hair to see if it really is Donald Trump's hair. I think it is. He takes great pride in his appearance, and there will be some beautiful ladies in the Baton Rouge area for the Miss USA pageant. And this is big stuff. The pageant's been around a long time. It's right there with the Miss America pageant.
It's a huge opportunity for Baton Rouge to be showcased all over the world. We're very excited.
And that brings us to a question from Diana. She asks, what's the difference? What's the distinction between Miss USA and Miss America? Are there different requirements as far as who wins the big prize?
I mean, they're different organizations with different hierarchies. So if you enter one pageant line, you continue up to Miss USA. If you enter the other, you continue up to Miss America. So I'm not personally familiar with Miss America pageant and their procedure since we've worked
with
Miss USA.
Don't they both have talent competitions, I think?
I think they're very comparable, just different organizations.
Okay. 297-5633, as we talk to Renee Arang, the Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Visit Baton Rouge. Another huge event coming this way, this month, to our city, which will certainly generate much attention and some people coming this way who ordinarily would not. The Bayou Superfest. 3 days now.
Yes, this is our fifth year for Bayou Country Superfest in Tiger Stadium. We've sold more than 100,000 tickets to that event, which is very exciting. In the past, the maximum has been about 87,000, I think, that's been sold. Can't believe that George Strait and Reba McEntire will be here on the Friday night. It's just huge for his farewell tour. And there aren't many tickets left, so if you haven't gotten them, I don't know if you can.
This is at Tiger Stadium, where construction continues on an addition to the stadium, which come September is destined to seat 101,000 fans, and there will be about that many in the stands when George Strait performs. When is he coming? Which day?
Friday, May 23rd.
The first one, right?
The very first night.
First night, George Strait, and he is... As country stars go, he's right there with the greats of all time, and he doesn't do a whole lot of this anymore, does he?
He doesn't, and this is his last tour, they say.
That's what they say. Now, Cher's had her last tour for Tina Turner. They just keep on going. But George Strait is much younger than they. He'll be 62 on May the 18th, and I'm sure that he will electrify the throng at Tiger Stadium. It was big stuff a few years ago when Tim McGraw came.
Absolutely, and the lineup is incredible. We're very excited to welcome back Luke Bryan, Jason Aldean. The whole lineup is great.
And I think George Strait may even stimulate more attention than did Tim McGraw, who performs more. He's a younger man. But Strait... as I said, country stars. This is a guy who I think eclipses the distinction of being a country and western performer. He is one that people, I imagine, Tim Muffet listens to George Strait. Johnny Downtown. Johnny, good morning. You're on the air with Renee Arang.
Morning. Wanted to let everybody know that former Baton Rougean, actually a Baton Rouge native, Danny Casey Cohen Kelly wrote Cowboy Rides Away for George Strait.
Cowboy Rides Away. Maybe Michelle can find Cowboy Rides Away from George Strait, written by a Baton Rougean. There's always a Baton Rouge connection, it seems.
Yes, sir. Let me in.
Do you know the guy who broke the Donald Sterling story last week for TMZ is from Baton Rouge, Louisiana? You just never know when Baton Rouge is going to pop up.
That's right.
And it's the center of our universe, and... I recognize that voice as Johnny Palazzotta, who he's an example. He's a guy known primarily for other kinds of music, but I bet he'll be there when George Strait plays Friday night, May 23rd at Tiger Stadium. Do we have George? Here we go. The distinctive voice of George Strait, who can still do it, and he will be doing it. I bet this will be the largest crowd he's ever performed before.
I would bet so. I think the maximum capacity with the stage set up and everything is around 60,000, so we'll see how close we are to that.
I remember in 1983 they had something called the International Special Olympics at Tiger Stadium, and Ted Kennedy spoke there. and he commented that it was the largest crowd he had ever spoken before, and it was at Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. George Strait, who's played all over the world, may very well have more people attending this one than any other. Now, as far as tourism, yesterday you unveiled something called Locals Campaign. What does this mean?
We did. This is an opportunity for our local residents to play visitors in their own backyard. We have been using viral engagement hashtag GoBR for a few years now, and we are asking our locals to go out and about in Baton Rouge and take some pictures, enter a contest to win using a GoBR keychain, hashtag GoBR keychain, that we will provide to them at no charge.
Okay. Well, that's a nice development. The tourism industry, you say, supports more than 8,000 jobs in Baton Rouge. How do you get to that number?
We commission research, of course, through University of New Orleans. They do it for the entire state of Louisiana. They provide the numbers to Louisiana Office of Tourism, Lieutenant Governor, and then all of the parishes as well. So, unfortunately, we don't get those numbers until September of the following year. So the numbers I shared yesterday were actually 2012. But we expect 13 to exceed 2012, and we will expect 14 to do the same.
When do you get the 2013 numbers?
We'll get them this fall, September,
okay,
usually.
Okay. Well, visitors spent in 12 more than $1.4 billion in the community. All we have to do is look at downtown, and there has been a renaissance in Baton Rouge, a much-needed one. The old Capitol House, for example, was closed for 22 years. Hard to believe it's been open now, reopened about 8 years, but it's going well, and there are several other downtown hotels now.
Definitely. We have about 800 rooms total downtown between the Hilton Hotel Indigo, the Belle of Baton Rouge, and the Hampton Inn and Suites, mm-hmm. which is the newest to come aboard.
And Peter notes that it has not been mentioned here, and I think he's right about the passing of Francis Grayson from the Indigo, the general manager. That happened when I was away, but he was a big part of downtown, wasn't he?
Absolutely, and it's a true loss to all of us. He was a happy, jovial, committed to tourism individual, and we all miss him. He actually was serving on our board for Visit Baton Rouge as well.
So. And only 53 years old, much too young. I have an email from Kirby Goydell at LSU, says he's leaving LSU at the end of the semester to go to Texas A&M. That's a big loss to the community. And we do all we can, you do at Visit Baton Rouge, to bring people to visit our city. And it's always sad when good people like Kirby Goydell find a better gig somewhere else.
Wish him all the best.
But Donald Trump, maybe the guy will move here. What do you think?
We'll see what opportunities abound there. Yep, we'll definitely make a stay worthwhile.
He might fall in love with Baton Rouge and decide, hey, this is where I'm going to spend my golden years.
That'd be lovely.
And it's hard to believe that the Trumpster is about to be 68 years old. He's been around for a while. We've seen him through three wives, I believe, and I think he may need a pair of eyeglasses. He told Larry King that he didn't think Angelina Jolie was a pretty girl.
Oh, my.
He says, Larry, I know beauty,
beautiful?
And she's not beautiful. Oh, which makes me wonder why, or how, I hope he's not one of the judges for the USA, Miss USA pageant.
They haven't told us actually who the celebrity judges will be yet, but I've had many, many opportunities or suggestions for who the judges should be, so we'll see who they turn out
okay.
to be.
And for those who love soccer, next month a huge soccer event is coming this way.
It's a tremendous summer. One of our responsibilities at Visit Baton Rouge is to create product and demand for the city. And boy, we overdid it this year between Bayou Country Superfest and its third day, the Miss USA pageant telecasting on June 8th, and then turn around hosting the Region 3 U.S. Youth Soccer Tournament, which will bring in between 15 and 20,000 visitors over the 8 or 9 days that they're here. It's incredible.
Where will they be playing?
Mostly at Burbank Park. We're working with the Baton Rouge Soccer Association and Louisiana Soccer Association to get all of that prepped and ready for the teams to play.
Over 200 teams. And we thank you for joining us today, Renee Arang.
Thank you, Jim.
And keep up the good work.
Thank you.
This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org online. And we're joined by State Treasurer John Neely Kennedy, a man who's following the budget path as lawmakers go into the final lap of the 2014 session with a major new development. The federal government Friday rejected Governor Jindal's financing plan for privatizing the administration of LSU hospitals. Good morning, Treasurer Kennedy.
Good morning, Jim.
What does this mean?
We don't know, Jim. The only people talking to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services are from the administration, so we really don't have any facts. I can give you my best guess. I think longer term, if CMS sticks to its guns, that's the federal government that makes the decision, the federal agency, it'll be between 400 and 800 million. I think it'll be closer to 400 million. My immediate worry is this fiscal year. We have funded this fiscal year, which, as you know, ends July 1. We have funded higher education's budget with some of these advanced lease payments, which CMS has ruled illegal, and to the tune of about $35 million. And when you couple that with some other contingencies that I'm afraid aren't going to happen, I worry that we're going to have a shortage for higher ed this fiscal year to the tune of $35 to $50 million. I wrote the Commissioner of Administration yesterday asking her what we should do, what I should do if the money doesn't come in, because higher ed is, if they have to cut $35 to $45 million from their budget with 60 days to do it, that's like, 100, 150 million cut if you have a year to do it.
Right. And you have stated it on this show, Mr. Treasurer, but higher ed has been cut by over 43% in the last 6 years with Governor Jindal in office, a bigger percentage than any other state in America. So can higher ed afford more cuts?
Not in my judgment. It's 67%. That's the amount of the cut if you don't count tuition. And I don't support raising tuition, as we've talked about. I teach out at LSU Law School, and my kids are graduating first and foremost with degrees in debt. I'll put my small government credentials up against anybody, but we're doing irreparable damage to our universities. And look, we both know that's the future of Louisiana. It's not the price of oil or the unemployment rate or who the governor is. It's education. That's our way out.
I remember when Bob Dole ran for president in 96, and he was not a fan of the man who defeated him rather soundly, Bill Clinton. He says, where's the outrage? Where's the outrage? Where's the outrage about higher education cuts in Louisiana?
I think the higher education community is scared to speak up. I know the college presidents are. And that's number one. Number two, they're going to pass the WISE bill, which will contribute an additional $40 million to higher education. Not nearly enough money. And the problem, I support the WISE bill. I hope it passes. I'm doing everything I can to get it passed. But the problem with it is, the money is, it's only $40 million. The money is tied to workforce development, and not every university is going to get in some of the money. I mean, they're saying that all universities will share, but at the end of the day, they won't.
Well, yesterday, the hospital cuts, or the hospital financing system being denied by the federal government, was a big topic at the legislature. I know the chair of the Democratic Party, Karen Carter Peterson, went into a pretty demonstrative outburst, saying that the plan was agreed to with blank pages. Did that really happen?
Yes.
It did?
Yes.
Well, who's to blame for this? Should lawmakers kind of look in the mirror and say, look, we were complicit in this?
Yes. They advocated. I mean, they gave the governor the authority to do all this, and I don't think that It's just my personal opinion. Under the Constitution, I don't think the governor had the authority unilaterally to do it, but the legislature gave it to him. And, you know, they can moan and groan, but the truth of the matter is they abdicated their authority.
Okay, let's give a listen to Senator Peterson. And mind you, I think she would acknowledge she's speaking from a partisan perspective, but here she goes.
We told this governor not to sign contracts that had blank pages. This is not new. This isn't new information we're getting. We acted irresponsibly. We told this governor not to sign contracts that had blank pages.
All right, she's saying that we told him. Well, not enough people told him, or he wouldn't have done it.
No, majority. A majority just allowed the governor to make the decision. And look, time may prove him right. I'm not saying that CMS is going to win this fight. I hope they don't. We got to make this work because we don't have a plan B. But I had concerns from the beginning, as did a lot of people. I don't want to get too technical, but that these advanced lease payments would be seen by CMS as provider donations or provider taxes, which was ruled illegal by CMS 20 years ago. Louisiana did this 20 years ago in the early 1990s, as you probably remember, and we basically used federal money to draw down more federal money, which is illegal, and we got in a lot of trouble, and Governor Foster inherited it, and he sent in then, I guess, private citizen Bobby Jindal to become Secretary of DHH to fix it. So this is nothing new. We tried it once before and got our hands slapped. Other states did, too. And I was really worried CMS was going to take this position they have. Now, maybe they'll reverse themselves on appeal, but in the meantime, we're counting on the lease money. And I can tell you that in the overcollections fund, to fund higher education for the rest of this year, over the next 60 days, they're counting on $35 million from Shreveport Hospital and the New Orleans Hospital in advance lease payments that CMS just ruled illegal. Now, maybe the hospital's lawyers will let them make the payments anyway, but I doubt it.
297-5633 if you'd like to join us in our remaining time with Treasurer John Kennedy, who has followed the budget for many years, going back to his days as Revenue Secretary, and before that he was Chief Counsel for Governor Romer, so he's seen budgets come and go, and today there is a front page story in the Baton Rouge Advocate written by Michelle Milholland, and it says, legislator and treasurer on quest to cut consultants. You've talked about this before. You say the state could save, half a billion dollars, you believe. How's that quest going?
We passed the House, and we're waiting for a hearing in the Senate Finance Committee. I'm talking to the senators. I don't know. I don't care to predict how it's going to come out because I really don't know. A lot of it will depend on whether the higher education community supports this in the committee or not.
You've been traveling the state making your case for this, visiting college campuses. How's that going?
Going well. Well, I've enjoyed meeting with the faculty and talking to them, and whether they'll come to Baton Rouge and articulate their feelings or not remains to be seen. But I know this much. I wish it wasn't like that, but it is. And the legislative process, as you well know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. So they made a change to the plumbing code the other day, or attempted to. We must have had 1,000 plumbers who came to the Capitol, and they turned back the change. And I don't know if that was a good idea or not, but the point is, if you don't come out in force, you're not going to have your feelings known. I mean, people tell me, and I understand people tell me all the time, you know, I'm too smart to get involved in politics. And I say, I get it, but that means you're destined to be governed by people dumber than you.
297-5633. John Kennedy with us, David at LSU. Hi, David. You're on the air with Treasurer Kennedy.
Mr. Kennedy, you say higher education is going to have irreparable harm from budget cuts. If the legislature doubles or triples the money they have, and enough for every student in Louisiana that graduates from high school can all attend LSU at any grade. It doesn't matter if they're all on F and D. How is that going to help LSU when they won't put out any money for pre-K and teach them while they're in elementary and high school to begin with, and they're all flunking out?
Well, that's not what's happening, but go ahead, Treasurer Kennedy.
Well, not every student could attend LSU because LSU now has admission standards. Students could go to other four-year schools or go to community college and transfer to LSU if their grades are good enough. Only about a third of our state has an advanced degree, and by 2025, about half of the jobs in Louisiana are going to require a degree more than a high school diploma. So the numbers are the numbers, and the world is changing, and so is the economy. We live in a knowledge-based economy, and it used to be in Louisiana you could earn a really good living if you had a strong back. Now you've got to have a strong mind. If we didn't have the money, David, I would say, you know, that's one thing, but when Mike Foster was governor, the budget was $12 billion. When Kathleen Blanco was governor, the budget was $19 billion. Today it's $25 billion. We haven't added any more people, and inflation's been under 2%. I think we have the money. We're just spending it in the wrong places. For example, consulting contracts.
Well, how much has the budget grown in the last 6 years?
You know, Tim, I don't know the answer to that. I know our debt's gone up. I just have to go look. The numbers I'm using are not including any one-time Katrina mm-hmm. money. I take that out because that skews the analysis.
Well, here's the issue, I think, is that the budget under Bobby Jindal has gone up, not down. There's more spending now than there was when he took office, and yet higher education, you say, has been cut 67%. How can that happen when the budget is going up?
They spent the money elsewhere. They spent the money on in the healthcare arena. They spent the money on NGOs. They spent and are still spending a huge, huge, huge amount of money on consulting contracts. The legislature allowed the governor to spend, or the governor's people, to spend over $100 million on a website out of the Department of Children and Family Services, half of which was state general fund money.
Okay, well, a question from Chico about how can it be that the state economy is apparently robust with new businesses coming to Louisiana, and yet the state budget is a mess? How is this? It seems a dichotomy. How what's going on?
Chico, I wish I knew. The number you see in terms of the new jobs is one point of reference, but the best way to analyze it is net jobs. In other words, if you bring in 10 and you lose 5, you really have only 5 net new jobs. So that's another figure you ought to look at. The real figure that I look at is per capita income. How much does the average person in Louisiana make? Because, you know, that's how people judge whether they're better off in terms of finances. Am I making more money or am I losing? And we have dropped in the last 5 years 3 places in our rank.
In per capita income?
Yes, yes.
Where are we?
I want to say, Jim, we were 28. I think we're 31 or 32 right now. But you would think the trend would be going up, but it's going down. I think part of the problem is that we have concentrated, and Stephen Murray has done an extraordinary job of recruiting out-of-state companies. Most of them are petrochemical companies who are coming to Louisiana for one reason, cheap natural gas. I'm glad to have them, but government can't really take credit for that. Oil and gas should take credit for that. They found that the natural gas, we've got an abundant supply, and that has attracted the petrochemical companies here. We haven't done enough to help small businesses, in my opinion. Most of the jobs created in Louisiana, despite the headlines, are created by small businesses. And, you know, they create 10 jobs here, 5 here, 4 here, 3 there. We haven't done anything to help the businesses already invested in Louisiana, and I think that's hurt us.
What about incentives to get business here? Those have a cost?
Yes. We've spent a lot. You know, We spent a lot on the incentives, and it's, I'm not saying we shouldn't. It's just you got to run the numbers and see whether the flame is worth the candle, whether the investment is worth the jobs. And then you've got to make sure that if you pay to bring a company in, they actually do what they say they're going to do. And really, that's a longer-term analysis. You can't just judge that over a 1 or 2 year period. It'll probably be 4 or 5 or 6 years before we'll know the answer to that. I remember when we were bidding to get ThyssenKrupp, the steel mill, to come to Louisiana, Governor Blanco offered them $400 million to come. We were all disappointed when they didn't come, and it turned out to be the best thing that happened to us. They went to Alabama. Alabama gave them $1 billion, and that plant was just sold for pennies on the dollar in Alabama. The steel market crashed, and boy, Alabama, the taxpayers of Alabama really lost a lot of money.
So that's one that got away, that it was a good thing that it got away.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Well, in the Senate, do you think you have a real shot on this consultant plan?
I do. I think it'll be close. It was close last year. It was a 4-4 tie. I thought we had it out of committee, and we had a 4-3 vote in our favor, but the chairman voted, and that, as is his right, and it became a 4-4 tie, so it killed it. I'm still working on the governor, trying to get his support. I think if I can get the governor's support, that'll help us get out of committee. But, you know, it took me 6 years, Jim, to pass a bill creating an Office of Debt Recovery to try to collect the money owed the state, and we passed that last year. So it may take me 6 years to pass this one, but I'll keep trying.
When does it go before the Senate panel?
We don't know yet. Probably sometime next week or the following. Okay. I'm talking with Jack Donahue, our chairman.
Jim, Jim on airline. You're on with Treasurer Kennedy. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. I wanted to object to the approach that our treasurer takes and that every member of the legislature and all of the blue states combined take. As a matter of fact, the Democrats are taking the same approach. I don't think you're ever going to do anything by interstate bitter fighting. You know, that's a zero-sum game. Somebody loses, somebody wins. I think we have to recognize after so many years that the globalization is what's killing this country, and we cannot continue to accept that kind of competition against third world wages.
All right. John, would you respond?
Well, you make a good point. It is a zero-sum game. I mean, probably the country would be better off if all the governors got together and signed an agreement that they wouldn't bid against each other to try to bring businesses in. They would try to sell business their quality of life. Jim, I'm sorry.
We both got to go, but thank you.
Could you give me a promise? Would you take a selfie with Donald Trump and get his hair in the picture if he comes by?
I will. Thank you.
I would, and send me a copy.
That's a deal.
But do not touch.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, 877-217-5757. Tim Muffett is in studio, the maestro of the Baton Rouge Symphony, the longest-serving conductor in the history of the Baton Rouge Symphony, which has a storied past. And this is a big week. It seems they all are, but this one is especially big, and he has one of the great violinists in the world with us, and she is in studio, and she came with her violin.
Yeah, so. How about that? Right.
Suzanne Howe.
Never leave home without it. So, nice to be with you.
Well, it's great to have both of you here. And Tim, this is quite a coup.
Well, this is our season closer, and so we wanted to go out with a big bang. And we've got big bangs both on the front and the back side of this concert.
Okay, well, tell us, why don't you set it up? You got few events this week, and we'll talk about another one tomorrow, but Thursday, Suzanne Howe will take the stage, and I'm sure she will electrify the crowd at the River Center.
She most certainly will, and I'm going to invite her to tell your listeners about her piece and her relationship. It's very interesting. But in a nutshell, we've got two love stories. We have the Butterfly Lovers Concerto, which is a very famous piece of music out of China, and then we have Ravel's ballet score to Daphnis and Chloe. So the two pieces work really well together. And maybe, Suzanne, tell us a little bit about this piece is special to you for personal reasons.
Well, it is. In fact, it's a story that's been told before. It's a Romeo and Juliet, but it's the Chinese version. And it was written just before the Cultural Revolution in China. And in fact, my father, who was... he wouldn't say it if he were here, but I can because I'm not him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he was, in fact, the number one violinist in China. And when the piece was written, it was originally intended for him to premiere. But then the Cultural Revolution came, and all Western classical music was banned. And this piece was the first concerto ever scored for a Western orchestra. And so it was banned for an entire decade. And so he never did make the premiere. And so not only does it have, a love story that has a sad ending, but it also has a premiere that had a non-ending. And so we thought it'd be nice to have it come together here.
Well, you have been playing the violin almost since the crib, haven't you?
Maybe 9 months before I was born, in fact. My mother was a violinist, so I'm sure I was practicing at -9 months already.
And born in China.
Yes, Shanghai.
In Shanghai. And at the age of 9, you studied at the Royal Conservatory of Music in Toronto.
I did,
That
yes.
was 9 years old. Kids in the U.S. don't do those kinds of things.
Not very often.
But you went from Shanghai to Toronto.
Yes.
Did you speak English at the time?
I didn't, in
did
fact.
Did you speak French?
I did not speak anything but Shanghai dialect, in fact.
At the age of 9, and your parents say, go for it.
Well, actually, I started even before that. That's when I went public, so to speak. I did my first public performance when I was 9 and then was invited to study at the Royal Conservatory by the principal at that time. But I started violin when I was 4 years old.
Four years old.
I know.
And ultimately, you went to Juilliard.
I did, yes.
So you've traveled the world, and now you are in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And we have one of the great conductors of any place in Tim Muffett, and I see him beaming at the prospect of what will happen Thursday night.
Well, this is Suzanne's second visit. She was here a few years ago and played the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto, and the audience just responded so enthusiastically to her that there was no question we needed to bring her back. And especially with this wonderful story.
Well, you have you brought your violin with you, and if you'll use it, we certainly would be honored to hear from Suzanne Howe, who will
well,
be.
Well, I have to make sure I don't knock things over.
On soil, we'll be okay. We'll be all right, and we'll get a sampling of the majestic performance that is to come Thursday night at the River Center. Suzanne?
I don't know how close I can get to these. I'll try this one.
There you go.
This is when your selfie should really be happening, right?
And Tim is showing his credentials as a conductor.
I thought I'd play a little bit of the opening love theme, because I think immediately you'll hear the difference between this love theme and the one that you can sing from the Daphnis and Chloe, Tim. Thank you. it's a Juliet theme.
Very, very impressive. And
well, it just takes you to a different land, I think.
You don't think
France or Germany or Austria anymore. All of a sudden, you're transported.
Now, you mentioned your musical family. Both parents, right?
Yes, both violinists.
So it's kind of in the genes.
Absolutely. Actually, my mom was one of these genetically selected at age 16, which is usually quite late to start violin. But she was selected out of tens of thousands to study at the Shanghai Conservatory, having not played a day in her life. So she had definitely the violin genes in her, and I sure hope she gave some of that to me.
They live in China?
No, they actually live in Toronto now.
Well, so you're a little closer, I guess, but you travel the world, so Toronto is one stop along the way, and Baton Rouge now has become a second stop for you. And I'm sure you, since you're back for round two, you were impressed the first time around.
Oh, well, I thought the audience was just really wonderful last time. And I know last time I jumped in at a last-minute situation, and we somehow made it happen. And I love when things happen like that.
Well, Suzanne is a captivating presence, a beautiful lady, still in her 30s. And when does a violinist usually reach his or her peak?
I'd like to say right now, because it's when you know, your ideas and philosophies, and you're really coming into your own, and I think in life as well, and some beautiful things happening in life that can be reflected in your work and art, and also still able to be at top physical shape. Typically, I think violinists stop playing around in their 60s, 70s, because the sensitivities are you know, quite delicate. We're dealing with very fine muscle control. So I think I've got another, you know,
20
years or... No, but I mean, 60, 70 is when you should really be starting to think about stopping.
What do you do to maintain it? How do you keep going? You just don't show up and play. You have to do some other things, don't you?
Well, I think you eat right, take care of yourself, and you know, I like to train, obviously, physically every day. It's very much like an athlete, so you just have to keep your physique at its top.
And how many performances generally each year, Suzanne, for you?
Well, I typically do, for the last 10 years, it's been on average about 120. But for the last few years, I've cut back because I've jumped into some production work as well and some special projects. So now it's about 60, 70.
It's a bit harder to keep a routine and to stay fit and do all the right things that you talked about when you're traveling from here to there, isn't it?
It's very difficult, in fact. I mean, keeping a steady, consistent, healthy lifestyle in the world while on the road is very difficult. So I'm always speaking to the chefs of all restaurants, asking if they can make things a certain way. They probably I think I'd drive them nuts, but...
297-5633 if you'd like to talk with Suzanne Howe and Tim Muffet in our remaining moments this hour. Suzanne will be performing at the River Center Thursday night, and you heard her. She is an amazing violinist, and you're from China, educated in Toronto and in the United States, and music is a universal language, isn't it? It brings the cultures together, sometimes brings people together who aren't speaking to one another. That is one of the great things about it.
Absolutely, Jim. And actually, you asked me a question earlier, which was, did I speak English when I came to Canada? And the answer was no. But I gave my first concert in Thunder Bay, in this little town, North Ontario. And I was 5 years old, and I didn't speak a word of English yet. But I played a little duet with my father, and people started clapping. And I didn't understand what that meant, actually. So I turned to my father and asked him, of course, in Shanghainese, what does clapping mean? What are they doing? And he said, well, this is people's way of showing you they appreciate. And I thought, wow, this is, it's just such a beautiful thing. And even at age five, I was hooked. I understood that I was able to communicate something, even if I couldn't through English, I could through music. And it was so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, Tim, you know it. In the audience, you have people who are of different political stripes. Some people from Baton Rouge, maybe some from Bangkok, and some from St. George, and they're all together.
There you go. It is a unifying experience, and that's why we're so important in a community, that we can bring people together for the cause of experiencing a live performance of any kind.
Mm-hmm. And the River Center is, I think, an underrated venue.
You know, we're very fortunate in the River Center acoustically. I think it's a good place to hear music there, and it's a great place to play music. So we're happy to have a venue like that around here.
Now, you were coming in here today smiling and beaming, not only being with Suzanne, but also saying some stuff about Twitter.
Right.
What's going
so
on?
I'll be quick here, but I know the story to Daphnis and Chloe, Ravel, when he wrote this music, the level of expressive and dramatic and emotional detail is incredible in this piece of music. So we had this idea that we could, some of this will be lost on the audience, they'll miss some of those details. So we are going to do a live Twitter feed that essentially is broadcasting the dramatic details as Ravel wrote them in the score. They're written there for the ballet director and for the conductor to know what the emotional content of the music is. And I have written this up. There's about 130 different tweets that we will broadcast to the audience. So in this concert, usually we come and say, turn your cell phones off. This time we're going to say, turn them on. And we've designated some Twitter zones so that all the people who want to participate will be together, and the people who
They'll
don't want to participate.
They'll be tweeting together, right?
Yes, yes. And the people who don't want to be distracted by it won't be, so because we want to be sensitive to that too. This is music that can stand on its own, but if you know the real details of the drama, it'll be an even more powerful experience. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna harness social media and try to enhance the concert experience in a very meaningful way.
Outstanding.
Yeah, we're excited about it.
Well, we have a big week, and we'll talk more about what's coming later in the week tomorrow, but I saw you at the opera Friday night.
I saw you at the opera Friday night. Was that your debut in an opera, Jim?
It was probably my first and last performance.
Right.
But you seem to be right at home, and I heard you say that the Manship Theater is a great place for an opera.
You know, I would have had no idea. It's in the kind of tradition of the small European opera houses. It was a wonderful, intimate experience, and very proud of our colleagues at Opera Louisiane for putting on such a beautiful, beautiful performance, and we're just so fortunate to have that organization in our mm-hmm. community.
Well, come Thursday, it'll be a captivating performance with the beautiful and exquisite Suzanne Howe, who plays the violin like few other people, and certainly a visually appealing artist.
Absolutely.
And the dashing Tim Muffet in his Manuel Martinez tales, right?
That's right.
That's right.
They'll be there. I don't leave home without them.
I mean, today is George Clooney's birthday, and you're the George Clooney of Baton Rouge.
Oh, now, Jim. This is going downhill fast.
Well, and as
I'll
stated,
tweet a photo of Tim from stage.
Okay, good.
And 3 days ago was David Vitter's birthday, and some people have called me the David Vitter of Baton Rouge.
Well, I'm not touching that one.
Well, I would like to be a U.S. Senator, but...
I'd like it if you were a U.S. Senator, Jim.
Well,
you would have my vote.
Well, perhaps if Senator Vitter gets elected governor, he'll appoint me U.S. Senator.
There
you
go.
Think that might happen?
I'll give him a call and
I'm
recommend
campaigning
it.
For it right now.
Excellent.
I want that job. But politics aside, Thursday night will be a spectacular performance. And how do you keep bringing people like Suzanne to town?
Well, we, you know, these are connections that I make in the business, and I've been doing this for a while now. I know who all the great artists are, and they take my call. So,
well, hopefully this will be a regular occurrence.
Yeah, we'd love to have Suzanne back. She's always a crowd pleaser, and everyone who comes Thursday night will see why.
And I didn't realize that you have to stay in such top-notch physical condition. It's all about the hands, isn't it? And speaking of the hands, we have a recording, so that's a good way to close. And we'll finish with a sampling of the great Suzanne Howe. And come Thursday, you can hear more of her at the River Center with the Baton Rouge Symphony Orchestra. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.